We are finally back here on Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast on Crack Sidewalks. I'm Joe McCann along with Phil Bush. It's been about a week or so, a little hiatus that tends to happen from time to time. But Phil, we got a lot to break down with the team. But boy, generally speaking, it's been a bit of a bummer over the last four games, Phil. After that big high after Villanova, we've really come down to earth.
Yeah, well, you know, New England won again and we lost three out of four games. So nothing good in this world.
Plenty to be depressed about, I suppose. But, you know, in today's show, we're going to bring a few more numbers into the podcast. I feel we've been basically talking a lot about, all right, the defense is bad, the offense is good, and we hope it can just get better. We're going to bring some numbers in, kind of maybe put in perspective where the defense is, where the offense is. Can anything be done to improve Marquette's chances as we face just, hard to believe it, Phil, just six regular season games to go?
Yep, and only three of them at home.
Yep, so it's getting down to the wire here for Marquette. So we're going to kind of look at that. But, Phil, let's talk briefly about the previous three games. We had three games since our last podcast. And obviously, you know, the huge bummer was St. John's. Probably the worst loss this year as far as expecting to win and then not coming through and then just delivering an absolutely brutal performance and really losing a lot of the goodwill that Marquette had built up from the Creighton and Villanova games. We said they maybe lost a little bit after losing to Providence, but then the St. John's loss, I was just sick after that one.
Yeah, well, it was one of those losses that was just inexplicable. I mean, you could say that it was a bad matchup for Marquette, but when you are clearly, by all measurable attributes, a better team than the other, to go in and lose convincingly to a team like St. John's is just disheartening. Now, the positive side of it is while you didn't get a win you needed to build to at least 10 wins that were saying the standard, it was as if the RPI and the selection show types were kind of collectively shrugged their shoulders because it didn't seem to have an impact. But it was a lost opportunity for sure.
Yeah, I mean, as disheartened as I get about the recent losses, Marquette losing three out of four here, they are still mostly projected in the field for now. I still, before the season, Phil, we kind of said 10 wins was the magic number, and as we get closer to it, I think maybe 9 might be enough. But I still think you're leaving that to chance a little bit. If you finish the regular season with 9 Big East wins, and you know if you lose in the first round of the Big East tournament, you know that would be like a 4-7 finish to the season. And you know that eye test they talk about is how is this team playing now? And you know last 10 games is something the committee they do look at that from time to time, especially when it comes down to a tiebreaker in one of those last few spots in or who's going to be the higher seed. So, you know, I, on the plus side, Phil, if we were projecting the season, you know, back in December, we probably would have had Marquette at 6-6 at this point, just not this way.
Right.
We would have had them losing to Creighton and Villanova and then beating Providence, St. John's, and DePaul. And so we honestly probably would be exactly where we are, but just the way it's gone down, I think there is some concern in the fan base, and I certainly have some, that this team has lost some momentum and may be going backwards when they really need to grab a few more quality wins before we could safely say they're going to be in the tournament.
Right. Well, I think the thing that's tough or what's causing the consternation is, like you said, 9-9 may get you in, but that's not a reflection on how good Marquette is. That's a reflection on how poor the bubble is this year.
Yeah, it looks like very, very few teams outside of the power conferences are even in the mix for bubble spots.
Right. There are almost no mid-majors other than the automatic qualifiers that would make it. Mm-hmm. And so that's allowing Marquette to kind of put this type of performance on. But I think the thing that's frustrating is and we saw it again in the Butler game, is they can have moments of brilliance, but more often than not, they have moments of just frustration where the defense, I mean, the end of the game that kind of summed up the season for me so far was they had a 6 or 7 point deficit going to the second to last possession. They scored, and then Butler got the ball on an out of bounds play with like 4 seconds left. And they went spread, and Andrew, not going to pronounce his last name, number 45 for Providence, just blew right by Fisher. Just like easy layup into the lane to score a bucket for them to go up. I think it was 7 or 8 at that point. And it was just like you couldn't get one stop after 4 seconds, that it was an easy blow by to the lane. It's kind of maddening.
You said Providence. You meant Butler?
Yeah, I meant Butler. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so Kravitz is who you're talking
about.
Yeah,
Kravitz, yeah.
I always think it's basically, it sounds like Travis.
I think you're right. It just, there's a lot of, there's a lot of consonants, and I want to buy a vowel, and I'm just not good at it.
Kravitz is an impossible matchup for Marquette because he's a little bit bigger. I mean, he's a forward who can handle the ball, and there's really no, and it is pretty quick off the bounce for a guy his size, and there's just, and when Fisher gets matched up on him, he's got no chance. And a guy like Hauser struggles against him, and then he's bigger than everyone else on Marquette's roster. So,
yeah, I think that was the only thing I really had an issue with from a coaching perspective in the Butler game on Tuesday was, Marquette got the lead with 5 or 6 minutes left, and then Butler adjusted and went to Kravitz as their five and essentially went small. And he just ate Luke alive. I think he had 4 or 5 buckets in a row that were layups or jump shots. And there was no adjustment from our side, especially on the defensive end. I don't know if you pull Fisher, but I think I might have in that case and gone small to match because, it just seemed like they were going to be stubborn and try and force something that clearly didn't work because they ended up – they got a garbage three with a second left. Otherwise, that's nearly a double-digit loss.
Yeah, that was one of Marquette's worst offensive performances of the season. If they just get, around their average in that game, they win that game. I think I would – while Butler's performance was not while the defensive performance against Butler was not great by any means, Butler still shot the ball well. Considering what we're working with, I would take that defensive performance more often than not. Rousey just had a bad game. He just wasn't himself. He was in foul trouble. He had some ticky-tack fouls, and when he was in there, he didn't shoot the ball well. Keaton Reinhart didn't have a particularly good game either. And so it was when the guys who had been playing very well lately and kind of led to that little surge there where they got the wins over Creighton and Villanova, when they're not performing – and your offense just takes a big step back. I mean, Marquette, that's their offensive efficiency has been well above 100 most games this season, and the games when it's been lower than that, it's usually the ones they've lost.
But there was a debate on Twitter. I'm stammering here a little bit, but there was a debate on Twitter with the Anonymous Eagle folks. And I think the thing to keep in mind, to your point, the defense was adequate. I don't think it was good by any stretch of the imagination. But
yeah,
it was...
I'm never expecting a shutdown performance. Honestly, I'd be stunned if they held a team under 1 point per possession the rest of the season.
I agree.
I mean, what was Butler's in that game? 1.03, I believe
yes.
It was. Honestly, I'll take that. I just hope Marquette is a little better.
Right.
But
yeah,
it just wasn't that night.
And so the defense was adequate. They were still below average, but they were adequate. It was clearly the offense that didn't produce enough to win. But the interesting thing is it was probably, especially in the second half, one of Marquette's better defensive performances of late. And it was against a top 25 offensive team in KenPom. So it would seem to indicate there's some ability there. What do you attribute the struggles on defense? Clearly we can coach offense. Clearly we have the players around offense. What do you attribute the defensive issues to?
Well, I think these things we've talked about a lot. Obviously Marquette gets caught in pick and rolls a lot. I think teams are always going to try to lure Luke away from the basket on a pick and roll. And then it seems like teams are going to get a couple easy baskets every game running a pick and roll. There's always that. Marquette has 2 point guards who are very small that can shoot the lights out, but when they're not shooting the ball well, talking about Howard and Rousey, of course, they really there aren't many guards that they can shut down, point guards that they can shut down, because most of the guards they're going up against are bigger than they are, and kind of and maybe even a little quicker too, and they just kind of blow by them on the other end of the floor, and so there's that, and Marquette really, I don't think Marquette really has a great defender for the four, for anyone really. Hauser does the best he can. I think he's adequate there at times, but I wouldn't say, you know, especially if you've got any of these teams that have an athletic four, you know, a guy, you know, Chris Jenkins always kills Marquette. He maybe didn't play well in the last Villanova game, but, you know, and Travis was of course a problem. So when teams that have a stretch four, that's kind of a nightmare for Marquette is, and thing another side of it is Marquette struggles a man as they struggle in zone. I mean, they went to a zone for a little bit against Butler, but what happened? Butler just picked it apart. Like a well coached team does. They moved the ball, they reversed the ball, they found the open spaces inside the zone, and they got open, you know, open jumpers or got a backdoor cut for a layup. There are plenty of issues with the defense, and I think we've talked about them a lot, but I think if you just want to boil it down to one point, I don't think Marquette has five good defenders on the team.
I don't disagree with that assessment. I think it's certainly part of it, but the thing I look at, you know, I guess what I have concerns for is it can't be, I don't think it can be attributed solely to the players or even potentially even in the majority of the problem being the players. I mean, if you look at Marquette's defensive rating on KenPom, they're 167th in the country out of 351 teams. That's bad. But then if you look at, even if you look at the, what are we calling it now, Power Six or the non-mid majors or whatever.
Like Power Six, but yeah. Whatever. Let's go with that.
We'll go with Power Six. If you look at the Power Six, so presumably similar strength of schedule or close to, Iowa's at 144, Michigan's at 130, Indiana's at 120. Apparently the Big Ten doesn't believe in defense. UCLA is at 116. Syracuse is at 106.
Yeah, the only Power Five teams worse than Marquette in the KenPom's top 100 are Pitt and NC State.
Right, and Iowa, Michigan, Indiana, from a UCLA, from a defensive perspective, do you think their players are worse than Marquette's? Like, considerably worse that Marquette's defense is that? St. John's is even ahead of Marquette on the defensive rankings. Are the players that demonstratively worse than any of those teams?
Maybe a little, but not significantly, no.
Right, and so that's where I go. Yes, I wholeheartedly agree. Everything you said, you know. Small guards, Hanif's really the only guard that can consistently guard. I think Dwayne Wilson's there, and I would actually make an argument that I think Dwayne Wilson should be getting Juwan Johnson's minutes right now, and potentially starting because, you know, his defense is probably better and his offense is probably as good right now at this point in the season. But having said, you know, so the guards are a weakness. Luke has trouble in space, though he's been better. He's been a much better rim protector of late. But the argument generally is the player personnel aren't great. I get that. But there are just fundamental issues, I think, that indicate maybe there's a coaching issue here too. And I don't know if Awojo and the staff can't reach the players and teach them effectively, if the players don't get the concept, if the coaches aren't consistent, if they don't understand, you know, the right strategy. I don't know what it is, but I'm concerned from a staff standpoint that we don't have the right mix for teaching strong defense. Clearly we got it for offense. But the defense is of concern to me, and I don't know that it gets better just by changing personnel next year.
Yeah, I laughed during the television broadcast, which I guess you didn't see because you obviously were at the game. But during the Butler game, they showed a clip of Wojo running a fantasy camp, And I don't know when I missed it, when like when it exactly was. It must have been earlier in the week, but it was just a bunch of older guys like you and me, Phil, in shorts and a t-shirt at the gym, and Wojo was coaching defense.
Oh
And like
boy.
they were sliding side to side, and they all fell down and took a charge. I'm like, maybe those guys could get out here and defend for us. But I try to give this coaching staff a little credit that they would have the ability to put together some kind of defensive strategy that would be adequate with this personnel. Because, Wojo sat next to perhaps the greatest of all time for 15 years, and Carrawell was coached by the same guy. And, I mean, the results are what they are. And, obviously they have not, like I said, maybe it's a matter of just reaching the guys, or maybe there's something they're missing strategy-wise that they haven't been willing to try or just uncomfortable trying. If I had the answer, I'd call them up and tell them what it is. I don't know what it is, but surely there has to be a way where we're not asking them to be a number one defense in the country here.
Right.
We're just hoping that they're not terrible. I
Right.
mean, like you said, out of 351 teams in college basketball, Phil, Marquette is
167.
166. Yeah, 160. Yeah, as we're recording this on Sunday night, so in the mid 160s, and out of the top 100 teams, so basically teams that have a hope and a prayer of making the tournament as an at-large, only three are worse than Marquette. That's UNC Wilmington, Pitt, and NC State.
Yeah.
That's it.
Right. And
So I
so
mean, so if Marquette were to be in the tournament, there's a chance Marquette might be the worst defensive team in the entire tournament.
that's not good. But
So
yeah, I
yeah,
mean
I'm yeah.
that's the frustration, right? And we can continue to harp on it, but that is inherently, the way I would describe it is, assuming we get into the tournament, let's assume we win,
It's a
10
big
games.
assumption right now, but yeah,
Right.
go ahead.
Yeah, I think the odds are in our favor, but not by much. But let's assume we get in. Basically, the way I would describe this team is the offense is great to historic, and the defense is below average to catastrophic. And if you get a combination of great offense and catastrophic defense, we're going to lose. If you get a combination of below average defense and historic offense, we could beat anyone. I mean, we've got probably the lowest floor and the highest ceiling of just about anyone in the Big East right now. And that's, I think, probably what the source of the maddening frustration is that they could literally have any performance on the spectrum at this point.
Within the span of 8 days, I think we saw the best and worst of Marquette. I mean, with the win over Villanova and then the loss to St. John's 8 days later, that's the best and the worst. We saw how good they can be and how glorious they could be if they put in an adequate defensive performance and shoot the ball well. And then we saw what could happen if they turn the ball over a bunch, do not shoot well, and have their typical defensive performance. The one solid thing you can count on, Phil, as we kind of dive into some deeper stats, Marquette is undefeated when their effective field goal percentage is better than their opponents. They're 15-0, and they are winless when it's worse. And there's really only one or two games where it's even been close. I think the Butler loss, it was actually close. But other than that, if your Marquette has a better effective field goal percentage performance, they win. Yeah, the Butler loss was close. Marquette was 56.9. Butler was 57.0. So Butler was slightly better and won
Was
that
that
game.
the at Butler game?
Sorry, that was the road Butler game. Yeah,
Yeah.
the recent Butler game, it was not close. Butler was at 57.8. Marquette was at an even 50.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the general hope is, as we've said a few times before, just hope we outplay our defense. The offense outplays the defense, and when that's happened, Marquette has won 15-0. When the other team has shot better as far as effective field goal percentage, Marquette loses.
Yeah, well, and I think one of the things during the run, the lackluster run, like the St. John's game and the Butler game, I think those were actually illustrations of where the offense let the team down. And I think I think Marcus Howard has hit a bit of a freshman wall here. We saw it in the recent Butler game. He drove to the lane probably five or six times, and four or five of them was blocked or rejected. Katon has always had that swagger, and we complained about it in non-conference, wrote it off for because of his injury that he struggled. Then he got hot for a while there, and then as the last couple of games has kind of seemed to regress into the jacket and we'll figure it out later, kind of offensive mindset that he seemed to have early in the season. And I think there may be, I was tweeting out some stats, and there might be some recalibration on the offensive side. If you look at kind of who's taking the shots and how good they are between, their shooting and their free throws, so the total points scored, the best person in terms of the volume of shots they take and the amount they score is Sam Hauser. So an argument could be made that we need to be feeding Sam Hauser a little bit more here, especially with Marcus struggling a little bit more of late. The next two on the list would be Luke, and as Steve the Homer True calls him, Wowzy.
I think that could be a thing.
I think we should make it a thing. We should only refer to him as Andrew Wowzy from now on. Though
when he plays,
Butler game was not Wowzy.
Yeah, when he plays well, it's
Yes.
Wowzy.
Yeah, so right now he's Rousey because he's coming off a bad loss. But, and Dwayne has been offensively, I don't know that I want to say potent, but he's been offensively serviceable, which is where, why I would kind of put Juwan somewhere down on the. I mean, he's, by the way, I was keeping these stats. Juwan is either the second to last or the last person in terms of their offensive ratio to shots. And, that seems to indicate to me that maybe Juwan Johnson needs to have a few less minutes and Dwayne Wilson needs to have a few more.
Yeah, to kind of recap here, this is some of the stats I wanted to dive deeper into, and these are things that Phil was tweeting out earlier in the week, and he'll put this on cracksidewalks.com if you want to look at them after we get the podcast up. So basically, kind of recap what you're going through here, Phil, because I know people can't necessarily look at the stats, is you're basically comparing a player's percentage of shots taken to their effective field goal percentage. So in other words, kind of. So maybe a guy who doesn't have the most percentage of points on the team, but on the rare occasion he shoots, it's for a high percentage, and that's what you're saying about Sam Hauser.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That when he does shoot, it's likely to go in or at least count for more than someone who shoots more but isn't as effective. So
Okay.
as an example, so Juwan Johnson is 55% in total shots, and that includes free throws. So it's essentially effective field goal percentage plus free throw shooting. So that rewards someone who gets the line. Juwan Johnson's at 55.5. Sam Hauser's at 60, almost 64%, but Juwan Johnson takes almost 8 full percentage points more shots in the offense than Sam does. So if you want, the theory is that you need to move volume away from the least efficient shooters to the most efficient shooters. So that would indicate probably Juwan Johnson, Katon, Reinhart need to have a little less offense going on and give that offense to somebody like Dwayne Wilson or Luke Fisher. I mean, the Butler game was a prime example. Luke Fisher didn't touch the ball in the post the last 4 minutes of the game. And that probably is one of the biggest reasons why Marquette was not competitive in that last 4 minutes, is they just weren't generating efficient offense.
Yeah, I think these stats are really interesting to kind of look at and consider maybe some guys who could contribute more and maybe some guys who maybe have been struggling. But the one thing that these stats can't account for, and there's really no way to measure it, is the hot hand. Because there are just some guy there, or on the other side, a guy who goes unexpectedly cold, like Rousey did. I mean, on Tuesday against Butler. I would have never thought Rousey would go scoreless against Butler.
No.
But
and that's some of the
there are
fundamentals.
games, yeah.
Go ahead.
No, it's, you know, there are games, as much as say Katon struggled, there are games where I would want Katon to just keep shooting and shooting when he gets hot. And like there have been games early, there were a few games earlier this year when Hauser was on fire. But it's tough to, it is a little tough to project, because sometimes when you get into a game, you do have to ride the hot hand, even though there's no statistic that backs up necessarily that a hot hand is a thing. But I think anyone who watches basketball says it is a thing. And so that's something that maybe Wojo has to kind of feel out and kind of figure out as the game goes along, saying, all right, well, I have Dwayne tonight, but I don't have Rousey tonight, so I kind of got to adjust.
Yeah, and you know, and that's with this team, it's going to be, and we talked about it early in the season, and it seems to be certainly more likely these days, is it's going to change. It's going to be all over the map. I mean, there absolutely will be a game yet this season, I bet, where Juwan Johnson is just on fire. He's getting to the hoop at will. He's making jump shots. He's hitting mid-range shots. That will happen, and then the coaching staff has to adjust to account for that. But the margin of error is pretty narrow. You got to have three or four of the players on offense, certainly, because like we've said, the offense has got to outperform the defense, because the defense doesn't have the capability to win you a game at this point. And that's a lot of pressure to put on offense.
Yeah, it is. That's the thing. Because I would say if I had to choose one or the other, honestly, I think it's easier if you have a good defensive team, it's easier to play good defense every night than if you have a good offensive team to say we'll have a great offense every night. Because sometimes the offense may just unexpectedly go cold and the shots don't fall. But if you're a good defensive team and you are well coached and you are comfortable in your schemes and all the players understand the defensive schemes, I think you can be confident in being a good defensive team every single night. So, you know, if I could only pick one, I'd love to be a great defensive team. But don't get me wrong, I love this offense. And I wouldn't necessarily give it back, but I guess what I'm saying is it's easier to be a consistent defensive team than it is a consistent offensive team, in my opinion.
I agree, but it's also less fun to watch, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, who wants to be Virginia?
Well, yeah, I generally agree with that. I mean, it would be nice to be in competition for a top three seed, to be sure. So, you know, I wouldn't go so far as that, but yeah, it's like watching paint dry to a certain extent.
Yeah. So. You know, it was, speaking of some other stats, something I kind of discovered just clicking around on KenPom before the show was, if you have KenPom, it's a great resource. I know a lot of you, if you listen to this podcast, there's a good chance you're at least familiar with it.
And if you don't have KenPom, you should get it. It's great.
Yeah, not that we get a stock in it or anything, but please do. One of the interesting things that I checked out is game plan, which if you go to the team page, say Marquette's team page, then above the schedule, there's a couple options. One says opponents, and then the other says game plan. Yeah, one says opponent tracker, and the other says game plan. If you click on game plan, that's where it has game by game all of the KenPom stats, like all the four factors, effective field goal percentage, turnover percentage, offensive rebound, free throw rate, all that per game. And one little thing that I've noticed on this page is there's a little number next to the offensive efficiency for the game and the defensive efficiency for the game. And what those numbers are is how your team rates for your opponent against all of your opponent's opponents. So, for example, if you look at the first stat, the offensive efficiency against Vanderbilt, which is 121.2, there's a little number 3 next to it. That little number 3, that means that performance Marquette turned in against Vanderbilt was the third best offensive performance Vanderbilt has seen all year. Follow? So if the little number 4 next to Marquette's defense against Vanderbilt, that means that is the fourth best defense Vanderbilt has seen this year. So if you could kind of follow what I'm saying there. So you can kind of basically see, okay, we are the X best offense this team has faced. We are the X best defensive performance this team has faced. And I thought a couple of the interesting things that jumped out to me, Phil, Marquette has turned in the best and third best offensive performances against Villanova this year.
Yeah, and Villanova is one of the best defenses in the country.
Yeah, so that's kind of crazy. You know, the best offensive performance was, oddly enough, in the loss. And, of course, if you remember that game, Marquette got a lot of garbage time points to probably boost that number. But the number is what it is. And then in the win against Villanova, that was the third best offensive performance anyone has turned in against Villanova this year. Now, of course, there is the downside. So teams have played roughly about 24, 25 games at this point in the season. So if you've got a 20 next to one of those numbers, that's one of the worst a team has seen. And yes, Marquette has turned in some of the worst defensive performances that our opponents have seen. The 24th defensive performance Villanova has seen this year, 23rd defensive performance Butler has seen this year. The one against
22nd
Wisconsin, that's
against
19.
Providence.
Yeah, 19 against Wisconsin defensively. So Marquette's turned in some pretty putrid performances defensively against some of these teams they've played. But hey, to your point that you made almost off the top of the show, Phil, the defensive against Butler wasn't bad. It was the sixth best defensive performance against Butler this year.
Yeah, take that, Anonymous Eagle.
So there's that.
And I think
But,
it
yeah.
like look at the St. John's game. It was the 20th ranked defense that St. John's had experienced. Ranks not right, but the 20th
The 20th best defensive performance
correct
against St.
against
John's
St.
this year.
John's, and then the 19th best offensive performance. So why did we lose to St. John's and lose so big? The defense was bad, and the offense was almost as bad.
Yeah, so I think that's an interesting way of looking at it. Say you can look at, so as you would imagine, if you look through the non-con and the bye games, you see a lot of ones and twos because we're probably one of the best teams, like IUPUI and Houston Baptist and Western Carolina are going to play all year. So it's just kind of an interesting thing. If you have KenPom, again, go to the schedule part, look at the top of the schedule, click game plan, and just look at the little numbers next to the offensive efficiency and the defensive efficiency when you look at this big spreadsheet. And it's kind of interesting to see, all right, well, we've turned in the best performance this team's seen, one of the worst defensive performance this team has seen. So you can kind of see where Marquette measures up. And as you would expect, a lot of really good numbers in the offensive column, a lot of ones and twos and threes. In those losses, there are some pretty high numbers, but and then as you would expect, some numbers in the defensive column that are a little up there, higher than 15, a lot of 18s, 19s, 20s, 22s. So that's something interesting to look at if you want to peruse KenPom and just kind of see where Marquette ranks.
Well,
But
and one other thing I would throw out there, it just interesting in looking at the non-conference and, so if you look at Vanderbilt, Georgia, and Wisconsin, so Wisconsin's Big Ten, obviously, and Georgia and Vanderbilt being SEC. Georgia, our offense was number one they faced. Vanderbilt, it was number three that they faced, and it was number two that Wisconsin faced. So, what do you take from that? I would say that if we do get into the tournament, I mean, we have the possibility, again, driven by the offense, to beat some teams. So the goal has to be, obviously, just for the fan base, you want to get in there. But if you get into the tournament and put yourself into a position, there's probably enough capability on this team that they could do some damage if the chips fall right and the matchups are right. So it's got to be about winning at least three, if not four, of the last six games to get a shot at that tournament.
Yeah. You gotta be curious, folks. I was just curious how maybe some other teams fared against Vanderbilt, because obviously Vanderbilt has played Kentucky and Georgia has played Kentucky as well. I'm just curious how like Marquette would have performed offensively compared to say how Kentucky did against those teams, because obviously Kentucky's one of the best, most explosive offensive teams in the country, and they. So Georgia or Kentucky against Vanderbilt, fourth best offensive performance against Vanderbilt. So that would be just below Marquette, and the sixth best offensive performance against Georgia. So that would also be below Marquette. So that's kind of one of the things I find interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, one of the things it tells you is the Big East is a very good conference because it's a tough conference.
Oh,
I
we
mean,
have.
so that's a factor, right? I mean, based on what I'm seeing, if we were playing in the Big Ten, maybe we wouldn't be so hard up for conference wins as we are right now. But that's kind of the pick, right?
You kind of bring that up about the Big East, and I think that's like an interesting thing to bring up is, I think there's a lot of cannibalizing in the Big East because, you go 10 deep in the league, and really, DePaul's really the only, honestly, really bad team. St. John's has been bad, but they've actually snuck out of some decent wins, and like they're a team that you don't like to face. See, in the ACC, I mean, there are some teams at the bottom that you can at least scoop up a few good wins against, and same for the Big Ten because everyone in the Big Ten gets to play Rutgers, and the other teams have that. And so when people talk about adding teams to the Big East, It'd be well, the topic of bringing in Connecticut came up again on Twitter this week.
Yep.
If you're going to bring in a team like Connecticut, I'd like to bring in one other team that I know is maybe just slightly worse than Marquette. Because, if you keep bringing in programs that are better than you, guess what? You're going to be at the bottom of the league, buddy.
Right.
Let's not bring in too many good teams.
Is there a DePaul number two that we could?
That's why I don't think it would be the worst thing in the world to, like, if the Big East had to expand and say Connecticut was coming in, I don't think it'd be the worst thing in the world, say, like, Dayton comes in because, somebody has to finish 12th.
And I can think of no better team than to put 12th.
Oh, gosh. They're gonna rile up some Dayton fans. They have a good coach, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But for the record, I'm comfortable with 10 teams in the Big East. Although the possibility of bringing in Connecticut is always intriguing to me, just because that's a great program and it raises the profile of the league. And if it makes everybody more money, it would make sense. But I still don't see how that happens with as long as Connecticut is committed to BCS football,
There,
FBS
there is
football.
there is 0.00% chance that UConn gets into the Big East with a football program in Division One football. There is no way it happens.
You would go that low? Like, I would say it's low, like 1%, but it's they have to house their football program somewhere, and I just don't see any league saying, "Yeah, we'll take UConn football. Your basketball teams, you go. You go do whatever you want to do. We're happy to have Connecticut football." I just don't see that.
There is no way that the Big East, it does not matter how terrible the Division One football program, football will always be king, and UConn, if they have a football program, even if they parked it somewhere else, would have alternative incentives than what the rest of the Big East has. And I just, I mean, Villanova at one point in time had aspirations to move their pro, I don't even know what their football program is now, but they had aspirations to eventually move it up to Division One, and it was flat out when reforming the new Big East, it was flat out that will not happen.
Yeah, it was. Villanova actually has a very good FCS football program, one of the better ones actually. I mean, Howie Long went there. Remember, Eagles running back Bryant Westbrook, he went there. They actually have a pretty nice football program as far as FCS programs go. But yeah, there was talk of moving them up to when they were kind of debating the future of the Big East. But yeah, I if Connecticut wants to still have football, they want to be in the Big East, they need to move it down to the FCS level, where Villanova, Georgetown has an FCS football team. Maybe not everybody knows that, but they play in the same league as Villanova does in the FCS subdivision. But
And I mean, one could argue that UConn's football program already is an FCS team, just playing up a level. But I digress.
yeah. The interesting thing is that thing seems to pop up on, my Twitter feed once every 2 or 3 months, that like somebody is reporting what it's always like somebody in the Northeast, like Adam Zagoria or John Rothstein or Seth Davis, maybe even sometimes just kind of leaking it out there. Reports surface Connecticut wants in the Big East. So I think Connecticut obviously is putting the feelers out there. I think Connecticut really wants to make it work out, but I just don't know if the feeling is mutual necessarily from the Big East perspective.
Well, that's interesting. I was going to ask you, who do you think is more interested, UConn in the Big East or the Big East in UConn? Because I don't think there's any doubt that UConn coming to the Big East, assuming you can negotiate a larger financial pie from Fox for, for the league, because you're not going to split the same pie 11 ways instead of
Right.
10. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah,
So
you're not going
assuming,
to yeah, you're not going to cut 11 slices instead of 10. I mean,
right.
You're
But assuming they could get at least equivalent, if not more, revenue by including UConn, is the Big East more interested in UConn or is UConn more interested in the Big East?
I think UConn's still more interested in the Big East.
I agree
Just
with that.
because I think they and their fans are absolutely miserable in the AAC. I think, honestly, who I feel bad for is the UConn women.
Yes.
I mean, they are the premier program in college, maybe all of college basketball, to be honest, as far as how much they dominate their division. And they basically are blowing out American Athletic Conference opponents by like 70 points a game. And they have got to be bored. I don't care. They would never say it publicly, but I mean, they schedule like top 10 teams in the middle of their conference play just so they don't get bored,
Yeah.
blowing out teams by, and not that this is a big factor, but it has to play at least a tiny factor that the UConn women can generate revenue unlike any women's college basketball program can, just because they are always getting on TV, they're always winning the national championship. And if they elevate the women's programs in the Big East just a little bit, that has to be at least a little, like, not to say, the big factor is, of course, how much money, you know, Fox Sports 1 is going to pay for the men's teams and UConn men's games. But the fact that the UConn women could elevate the exposure for the women's side of the Big East Conference has to at least play a little bit of the consideration if there's going to be negotiations to bringing them in.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I mean, it would be great. That's another reason why it'd be interesting. I mean, it'd be great for Marquette's women's team. They're doing well. I mean, they're drawing 2,500. You know, I almost said students, but it's clearly all sorts of fans. They're drawing 2,500 fans a game on a Friday at 11:30 in the morning. I mean, so the Marquette women's program is very strong, and bringing in UConn can only you want to play tough competition, right?
Absolutely.
And so bringing in UConn would be a huge asset for both the men's and the women's program. So there's definitely a mutual interest. I don't know about, again, absolutely not unless the football program's gone. And then, you know, I like the round robin nature of the conference play right now, that you play every team twice going to 11. If you're bringing in UConn, I think you go to 11, and I actually think you continue the round robin style.
Yes.
And you drop one or two non-conference games.
Yeah, you kind of went Spinal Tap on me there going to 11.
But yeah,
I agree. I think, because I think they're saying the ACC is going to go to 20 league games as well. I think in a couple years,
mm-hmm.
next year.
Yeah,
but you know, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. 20 conference games, and so you don't play Western Carolina and Houston Baptist. That's fine.
Right. You know, or we don't play St. Francis of Pennsylvania and SIU Edwardsville the last two.
So maybe you drop one of your, let's say, middling, you know, non-conference games as well. So maybe you wouldn't have played Fresno State. And, I could get behind that. I could get behind 20 league games. I could, and 11 teams. Even though it seems unbalanced, so there would be somebody who is off kind of every round of games, I wouldn't say necessarily a bye, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Because obviously one team would have to be off every week, or maybe playing a non-conference game. Maybe you kind of spread it out. And there's been talk of that to maybe boost the visibility of college basketball a little bit. Start conference earlier, say early December, and then have a couple non-conference games mixed in January, February. Well, just to maybe, because more TV games, a little more exposure. Like they were talking about how that Kansas-Kentucky game the other week was great because it was a, you know, nationally televised game, two powerhouse teams. Villanova played Virginia the same weekend. So I think you could work it out several different ways. And so I'd be all for it. If it made the Big East more money and it made sense for Connecticut as far as their football team, whatever they want to do with it, I'm all for it. I don't know how to figure it out, but would I like UConn in? Absolutely. But
yeah.
I just don't know how it could possibly work.
Right. After a scant 10 minutes on this podcast, we've come no closer to having answers, but we're all for it.
Yeah, sorry we got a little off topic there, talking a little bit more Connecticut, but I thought it was an interesting topic, and it was something that every Big East fan seemed to debate every couple months it comes up on the feed.
But, well, and let's be honest, the other one that comes up all the time is Gonzaga, and UConn makes infinitely more sense than Gonzaga. So if you can justify Gonzaga, UConn, like, just do UConn and be done with it.
Yeah, see, I've always, when it comes to Gonzaga, I've always just been of the opinion that Gonzaga could be like some kind of like unofficial member where it has like a non-conference agreement that to play like two Big East teams every year or something like that, one home and one away. And so like Gonzaga plays two Big East teams every year but is never a member of the Big East.
Right. And those could be games, like you said, those could be marquee games that you slip in during the quote-unquote conference season when you extend it out, you know.
You're not going to be sending the women's volleyball team and track and field teams out to Spokane
for
conference games.
No, I mean, we will be broke in no time.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a lot. But hey, you know, getting back to Marquette, Phyllis, we kind of wrap up this podcast a little bit. So, you know, we've been talking about getting to 10 wins. Marquette has now 6 games left to try to, you know, at least finish 500 in the league. And if you're looking at the KenPom projections, it's 3-3 down the stretch. Lost to Georgetown, win at Xavier at home, win over St. John's. Lost to Providence, lost to Xavier, win over Creighton. Who knows if it'll actually turn out this way, because as we've seen so far, the projections can be wildly off, and that's why we love college basketball so much, is it can be unpredictable. But how confident are you, Phil, that Marquette can at least finish 500 and get 3 wins out of these last 6?
Oh boy, I'm not.
That reaction there tells me everything.
Yeah, I'm not super confident. It really is going to hinge on, and Wojo said this in a post-game interview, and I kind of stood there with my jaw open for a little bit after he said it. But, you know, he said, well, this is after the St. John's loss, he said, this is a totally different team I've coached over the last week than the week before. And it's kind of like, well, that's not great. You know, and so if the team is really that Jekyll and Hyde, man, I guess what I'm most concerned about is the fact that we play Xavier twice and we haven't played Xavier yet, right?
Yep.
So we don't have a firm idea of how competitive we are with Xavier. I mean, with the Butler game, yeah, we lost both games, but after the first game, we kind of said, oh, all right, we can compete with Butler. Probably, if they had played better, at least their average, they would have beaten Butler the second time. But we don't have a good feel. So, I mean, those two Xavier games, who knows, those could be losses. The Creighton game, you know, we beat Creighton, yes. But that was their first game without Watson. All sorts of things going on, and it wasn't like a resounding win. Yeah, we scored 101 points, but we gave up 94. So, not, you know, not ideal. Actually, 102 points, but who's counting? Those 3 games alone give me the most reason for pause. And then you've got St. John's and Providence who have beaten us already. So,
I'm going to be a little sick to my stomach, Phil, if Marquette finishes the season with sweeps to either St. John's and or Providence.
Agreed.
You got to beat those teams. I mean, you don't want to go into the committee room with your resume and saying you got swept by St. John's and Providence. Even though Providence is kind of like on the bad side of the bubble right now, believe it or not, they're actually kind of in the mix. But I still think they're going to finish in the bottom tier of the league, and you can't be swept by St. John's either. So you got to beat St. John's at home. That is, to me, I would put that as the one game that they absolutely positively cannot lose.
Well, I have to – yeah. I mean, if we're counting – you know, if we say the bare minimum is they need to win 3 games and that's – it has to be Georgetown, Providence, and St. John's.
I wouldn't say Georgetown necessarily because it is a road game. You have to beat St. John's and Providence, and you have to find one more out of the other 4 is the way I look at it.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it.
Yeah, because, you know, Georgetown – playing better. I mean, even though I don't necessarily consider them a great team at the moment. By the way, worth mentioning that, you know, as you remember, after our last meeting with Georgetown, Juwan Johnson infamously said on television that Georgetown doesn't want to guard anybody. Georgetown's defense is 58th compared to Marquette's 166. So there's that.
Yeah, that's encouraging.
So... get ready for Georgetown to get after it defensively as the best they can on Saturday. I hope Marquette can come through with a win. I just cannot be. I'm just really not confident. I don't know what to expect from either one of these teams, to be perfectly honest. I hope Marquette can get it together against Georgetown and get a win on Saturday. But I am a little concerned that Georgetown is playing a little bit better lately, particularly defensively after Juwan called them out. But I am a little concerned for the trip to D.C. on Saturday.
Yeah, I am as well. I again, if I was a betting man, gun to my head, I think we win, but I'm of the 51-49 type of split on this one.
So is KenPom.
Yeah. I ironically, on the other side of it, but the one other thing I want to ask you out of this is so. So we played Georgetown on Saturday on the road, and then a week off. So that feels like a good time. Even if they lose to Georgetown, that gives them the team an opportunity to reset and say, okay, we've got to have a winning record in these last 5 games to have a shot at the tournament. And they should be highly motivated. No, none of these players have ever been to any kind of postseason tournament, especially not the NCAA. So you would think there's an opportunity to reset there. Do you think, even with the Georgetown loss, they reset in the last five games.
I mean, really, what? I mean, what could you reset though? I mean, could, I mean, with five games to play in the regular season, can you just change everything you've done all year?
Well, I guess when I say reset, I don't mean that they're going to do something differently or come up with some miracle that they hadn't had before. I just mean like mentally, kind of clear the blocks and go out and just, you know, try and put the best performance together they can game in, game out.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just kind of say what the coaches would probably say to that. That's what we do every week. We try to put the best performance together every week. It just doesn't come to fruition. Now, I get what you're saying, though, is that maybe refocus a little bit, clear your heads. You know, if some guys have been frustrated a little bit, maybe even take a day off and clear your head if the guys have been frustrated and just try to regroup and maybe just spend a little more time preparing for those last few games. Study all the Xavier film you possibly can because you're going to play them twice in your last five games. But I get what you're saying, but I don't know if that bye week is going to I guess what I'm saying is I don't think the team is going to be a drastically different team after the bye than before the bye. Maybe just refocus a little bit. If anybody's dealing with some nagging injuries, get a full week of treatment on those. But other than that, I don't expect to see a drastically different team after the Georgetown game.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I was looking at it from a maybe fresher legs and a better perspective. But we'll see. I mean, I think the key is taking a little bit of the pressure going on into that week off by getting a win against Georgetown. You get a win against Georgetown on the road. And then you can go 2-3 or 3-2 down the stretch and feel, especially if you go 3-2, you feel relatively confident that you're going to get a bid to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
And that's the goal, right?
So that's my only goal for this team. If Marquette can somehow make the tournament, everything after that is gravy for me.
Yep.
Now, obviously, if they get one of those matchups that some of the bracketologists are trolling us with, I absolutely would need a win over Indiana or Virginia Tech if either of those matchups happened. But I guess my dream finish for the season, realistically, make the tournament, beat either Indiana or Virginia Tech in either an 8-9 or 7-10 game, and then, you know, just get our doors blown off by a 1 or 2 seed in the next round, then call it a season. realistically, that would be my dream way for this season to end, because honestly, realistically speaking, any team with a 160-ish defense is probably not going to see the Sweet 16, certainly not the Elite Eight or Final Four.
I agree with all that. The one final question I would ask, which would you rather have, face Indiana and win or face Virginia Tech and win? Which would you more want? Conversely, which would you least want, losing to one of those two teams?
I would say both answers would be Virginia Tech. I think it would mean more to the players because there are at least three players on Marquette's team that signed with Buzz. Dwayne, Luke, and Juwan all committed to Buzz. Only Juwan actually played for Buzz because Dwayne redshirted, of course, and then Luke came in as a transfer. But I think the emotions would be, because, you know, obviously the most recent guy to leave is always, you know, the emotions run a little bit hotter there. So for that reason, you know, I know this may be an unpopular opinion in the Marquette community. I'm kind of over Tom Crean. I don't dislike the guy. Do I root for Indiana to win games? Of course not. But would I, and if Marquette played him, of course I'd want to beat Indiana, and I would love every minute of it if Marquette did. But
can you imagine how many pictures we would post on Twitter should we beat Indiana?
I would just let Ruby Q post them all, and I'd retweet all of them.
Yes, that's true. Let one person do all the heavy lifting. But I agree.
I let the expert handle that.
I agree. There's probably more vitriol around Buzz. It's fresher. I mean, there are current students and current fans that were not fans during the Crean era.
Yeah, that's true.
I think
honestly, you know, a lot of kids, especially kids who come from out of state, probably aren't Marquette fans at all until they set foot on campus. At least that was true for me.
Right.
Like, I wasn't a Marquette fan until I became a student there. And so, like, I don't know how many people grow up Marquette fans unless your parents were alumni. So there probably are a lot of fans who really have no emotional attachment to Tom Crean at all. And they say, oh, he was the coach there? Oh, cool. But, I think there are a lot of, obviously, almost all the current fans remember Buzz as the coach. And I'm sure there's some bitter feelings and whatnot over Buzz. So, yeah. Either way, but the answer to both your questions, I would want to beat Buzz more, and I would be more haunted by losing to Virginia Tech as well.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. So, but the key is we got to win at least. We got to win 4 out of the next 6 to get there, I think.
I'd say 4 out of the next 7
Okay,
to get there.
with the Big East tournament.
With a Big East tournament win. I think if Marquette goes 9-9 in the Big East and wins that first game, that's enough. If Marquette goes 9-9 in the Big East and loses that first game, I think we'll be holding our breath on Selection Sunday.
Right. I think the goal 9-9, if Marquette's 5th in the conference at 9-9 and gets a win in the Big East tournament, I think that's enough. Again, with a super terrible bubble.
Yeah, because I think because if you're 5th in the Big East, you'd be playing the 4 seed, so more than likely you're playing Xavier or Butler in that, or maybe Creighton in that first game. So, yeah, so that's how I look at it. 3-3, so 4 out of the next 7 is kind of my realistic goal now. So, hope hey, if we get the first one, we can be happy. But as we've learned, not you know, don't get too happy because things happen.
Right. It's amazing what changes in less than 20 days after that Villanova win.
Yeah. So as always, we thank you guys for listening here on Scrambled Eggs. We especially thank the maybe couple of UConn fans who heard about that we've talked about them and tuned in for that brief part of the podcast. But as always, we welcome your feedback. You can hit us up on Twitter. I'm Joe McKinn3. Phil is MOOF23. Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. You can leave your comments on cracksidewalks.com. If Phil posts some of those numbers that we talked about, some of those charts that he had put together, so you can kind of look at what we were talking about, that'll be on cracksidewalks.com. And of course, we have a Facebook page for Scrambled Eggs as well. And rate us and review us on iTunes. Phil, you, for the record, predicting a win on Saturday or not?
Yeah, I'm going to predict a win. Fact.
I'm going to be Debbie Downer and say loss. Please prove me wrong.
Boo.
Seashells and balloons, everyone.